are listening to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and if you're just tuning into this program or listening to the future of energy, the world continues to face critical energy challenges. With political change happening in many parts of the world, what can the world expect?
Okay, well, we have a limited time but enormous territory to cover. One place to start, I think, is the amazing revolution that seems to have crept up all of a sudden in America in energy through unconventional gas and oil, and the report just lately that the United States would very, in a small number of years, become the world's biggest oil producer again, overtaking Saudi Arabia and Russia. What are the implications of this from your various perspectives? First of all, Marvin, perhaps you could say, do you see energy independence by the United States or North America as a whole in the very near future?
Well, I think what's becoming clear is the resources that would enable that appear to be there. Now, whether or not it's the right thing to do or whether or not the U.S. and North America chooses to move to self-sufficiency, I think is a completely different question. So one of the things that I would like to have predicted is that in 2012, the U.S. would actually develop an energy policy and have an energy strategy in this country. Some of that is clearly going to involve developing some of this natural gas and these unconventional oil resources. But how much, I think, will largely be a matter of policy.
Yeah. And Fred, from your point of view, are you relaxed about this whole upsurge of the fracking industry? It seems to have happened so fast. Or are there, in other parts of the world, there are very big misgivings about it. France has temporarily banned it, and so on.
Relaxed is not the word I would have chosen. This has become an extraordinarily contentious issue. One of the reasons it's been contentious is because there are impacts on the communities, and too often, up until now, many companies, and Shell has been an exception to this, but many companies have denied there are any impacts. So the community sees their water contaminated, not necessarily by the fractures, but by spills on the surface or wells that haven't been drilled properly and cement casings that fail. Community see their water getting contaminated by natural gas operations. Industry says, well, it's not the fractures. I visited in Washington, Pennsylvania, 30 minutes south of Pittsburgh, as part of President Obama asked Secretary Chu to appoint seven of us to chart a safe path forward on shale. I visited there with a woman who told our commission that she had been forced to abandon her family farm because of the noxious emissions from the neighboring wells. Her son, in order to continue to go to school, was living with a neighbor. She was living out of her car. No one in this country should be forced to trade their health for cheap energy. The good news is that we are beginning to see states, mostly the states, begin to put the rules in place to protect communities and to protect the public health. That is critical to EDF's involvement in this issue. We are going to frack a lot of shale and a lot of other formations. It's just a fact of life. 90% of oil wells are being hydraulically fractured. We've got to get tough rules in place that protect folks. And the last thing I would say on this is that there's another issue that, in addition to these local impacts, is very serious and hasn't been paid much attention to, and that's the global issue of fugitive methane. Natural gas is mostly methane. These fugitive emissions from the wells, from the pipelines, if you have over 3.5% emissions, you actually, when you use natural gas instead of coal, that would be worse for the climate than coal. EPA thinks we're at 2.5%, but nobody really knows. And so Shell and several other companies are joining with us to go out and measure what the emissions are. And while I'm at it, I not only want to thank Shell for being willing to cooperate on getting to the science, but as I told Marvin before we stepped out on stage, In Colorado, repeatedly now, Shell has been there calling for stronger regulations of its own industry, agreeing with EDF on how to go forward in a way that really is very meritorious. So I just want to thank you, Marvin, for what Shell is doing on this topic.
And Governor Whitman, you mentioned that there would need to be a mix of energy, and you mentioned nuclear. Is there a danger that the extraordinary growth of unconventional gas and oil in America creates a sense of abundance and no longer a need to worry about renewables that Marvin talked about and nuclear, for example?
It's certainly having an impact on investment and research and development. There's no question about it. It has slowed down. There were something like 17 nuclear reactors being considered just to keep us at 20%. Nuclear is 20% of our overall power mix today. That's backed off. We have 4 currently being built in the country, but you see that happening. And the thing we have to worry about, again, is putting all our eggs in one basket. We've been here before, where natural gas was a very low cost, and then we saw the prices spike. It's not necessarily where you want to over-invest. We also don't know, there are emissions, it's a fossil fuel, so as we look at the issue of climate change and the need to control our greenhouse gases, we need to look at all those other forms of power that can give us the ability to, I'm not sure I would say we'd ever be energy independent, because energy is fungible, it moves around the world, but we'd be certainly a lot less dependent on countries that don't like us, and it will have a real impact, frankly, on our international policy and what we do in the Middle East, which of course is of grave concern to many people, and as well it should be. So right now the cost of natural gas is certainly having an impact on the decision makers on where you put your money and how fast you develop, but I think the utilities have been down this path before to the degree that they understand that it is going to be a mix. They're going to need to have a mix, and most of them do invest in other forms of power beyond just the natural gas.
Yeah, quickly, because we want to have time.
But, yeah. I think, and not to disagree with what's being said, but I think, you know, someone who's been in this industry for the last 30 years and is actually a skeptic of resources and claims about how big they are and so forth, I will tell you that I think that the natural gas resources that have been found in this country are different than what we've seen ever before. And to go to Fred's point, if we do this the right way, and these resources won't get developed if they're not done the right way, but if we do them the right way, it is a new world from what we've seen in the past.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Questions for... I've been a bit biased towards this side of the room, so let's have this side of the room. Yeah.
All right. So my question is, do you feel like the private sector could respond well to a policy designed to reorient their focus around developing cleaner forms of energy production, specifically something like a cap and trade or a revenue neutral carbon taxation plan? And what would that response look like?
I mean, I can take a first stab, but then there are others who are more directly involved with it than I am. But clearly, the utilities are going to see a demand and a need. Right now, companies are seeing more and more shareholder proposals every annual meeting, asking them to benchmark their carbon footprint. And those are getting greater and greater votes. So companies are now seeing the ability to reduce their carbon footprint, the ability to reduce their reliance on water as good marketing tools and a way to distinguish themselves from others. And that's a positive reinforcement. So they can see that there is going to be actually some advantage to making these kinds of investments as they move forward. And I think that's a very good sign. You're going to see more of that, more attention to those things, because that's what their shareholders are starting to care about. As they look at the overall economic impact that you have from superstorms like Sandy and the potential that these have been influenced, not caused by, but influenced by the climate change we've been seeing.
Let's take some more questions. There's one of the at the end of the row there. Yeah.
Stand up.
I write about risk management and insurance, and believe it or not, for us, climate change is a really important topic because due to the drought and due to Sandy and big storms, it's affecting the solvency of insurance companies and the ability to offer affordable coverage. And we have been speaking to a lot of regulators, Washington, New York, Colorado, who are now agreeing that climate change is something that we really need to as they put forward as a national agenda, same thing with associations. But at the same time, I was, for an article, I was speaking to the executives at a wind turbine manufacturing company, and the next week I spoke to them, and they had just lost half of their workforce. So we really do need to, pardon me, I have a cold. We really do need to think about the switch to alternate utilities, but at the same time, the state of those companies is not very strong, so do we need to put the agenda forward first, or do we need to develop strong alternate energy companies first?
Want to take that?
Maybe just take a quick initial stab at it, because I think I can tie these two together. So from a private sector standpoint, I think, you know, taking advantage of the opportunity that's right in front of us, which is using market mechanisms to drive a change in the energy mix over time through a price on CO2, in my mind, ideally through a cap and trade system, because it lowers the cost to everyone overall. But even if it took some form as a carbon tax, there's other ways to get there, is the important first step if you want to shift the energy mix, because then you get the full weight of all of that drive, investment, technology, and so forth moving in the right direction. I think it's more important than taking what feels like a little more one-off trying to hit specific sectors. It's just a smaller step and a harder way to get there.
Let's take another question. We have very limited time in the middle of the back there.
Thank you. Marvin, Shell's obviously driving the push into the Arctic. Can you talk a little bit about some of the environmentally sustainable things you're doing there? And Fred, maybe if you can talk about what do you think about the developing the Arctic from EDF's point of view. Thank you, gentlemen.
So really hard to do in 30 seconds, but let me just give a shot at it, and we'd have to find a way to have a longer conversation. First of all, it means you have to do the development part right. So you have to be efficient in how you use energy and the equipment you use and so forth. You have to do it in a way, and this is a long story behind it, in terms of protecting the environment when you explore for and then ultimately produce resources from a place like the Arctic. The drive behind it is a belief that the world will need these energy resources, and something like a quarter of the world's energy resources from an oil and gas perspective are in the Arctic. So that's the, you know, in such a short period of time, that's really all I can tell you, is it's all about doing that right. It's about the scrutiny from regulators and from all sorts of NGOs and outside parties about whether or not we're doing it the right way. But that's what supports the program.
Right.
Well, obviously the Arctic, I've been north of the Arctic Circle a couple of times, and it's a very fragile and precious place, and more of it is becoming accessible due, sadly, to the melting ice. So we've got to be extremely careful there, because oil doesn't break up as fast if it spills up there as it does in warmer ecosystems. I might also say that those of us who think a lot about climate change, it's pretty easy to be depressed. It's pretty doom and gloomy when you see how fast this is coming on. It's coming on way faster than the scientists who work for me thought it would. Capitalism, when it doesn't have companies account for those external costs like the pollution, like the climate pollution, is what is driving this. We're here, the economist, it's what the economists call externalities. But the reason I'm hopeful...
Do you think we could have a carbon tax in America, for example?
I would like to see a price put on carbon linked to a cap on carbon that guarantees that we have reductions. To me, the trick isn't what the price is. The trick is we've got to get a system in place that mandates reductions. But that is why I'm hopeful, because when we try capitalism... when we put the incentives in place so that solar and wind power and geothermal have a level playing field, watch what happens. And in the rest of the world, in the European Union, now in China, 250 million people live in provinces that are trying cap and trade. In Australia, cap and trade. New Zealand, cap and trade. South Korea implementing a carbon system. We are moving in more and more places to a place where we do what Marvin and the governor have called for, where we use capitalism, get the incentives right, which we haven't until now done. And that makes me hopeful, because entrepreneurs harnessed to invent what we need to have a clean planet can give us a clean planet.
Final thought, Governor Whitman?
I would just echo, frankly, what they say, that the economic drivers are there. I do think it's going to happen at the state level. You already see California is doing a carbon auction. It's going to be the states that are going to drive it, as well as the multinational companies that want to have regimes in place that are harmonized with Europe. And Europe and the rest of the world are moving ahead of us as far as addressing the issue of carbon and carbon emissions. And it makes it difficult for companies to do business across country lines because they're subject to penalties by not meeting some of the requirements of other states. And it puts us into a very difficult position. So hopefully those are going to be the drivers that are going to get us there. I don't see much appetite right now for a carbon tax. We don't seem to like tax in any way, shape, or form. And so I don't know, but that's a pretty clean way to do it.
But your party might have advocated a tax or something.
Well, not all of my party.
Anyway, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much for a fascinating discussion. Thank you.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
I'm crying, sitting on the door and saying, waiting for the day to come. A couple with your t-shirts singing about a Tuesday, man, you've been a naughty boy, you let your face go wrong. I am the Eggman, they are the Eggman. Girl, you let your corn hold down. I am the Eggman. They are the Eggman. I am the walrus. The girls are too. Sitting in an English garden, waiting for the sun. But if the sun don't come, you get a tan from standing in the English rain. I am the Eggman. They are the Eggman. I am the walrus. Experts, expert joking smokers. Don't you think the Joker mess with you? Say I'm a guy like he's in a spicy Harvey's night. I'm crying. Simple in the future. But every head's on tower. Now the Lindsay Baker singing, oh, I wish the band, you should have seen him kick the nigga out and go. I am the Eggman. I am the Eggman. I am the walrus. I'm
Can we see by the one light in all our earth to embrace at the call of all nations where our children can play in a world without war? Where we stand hand in hand in the grace of creation, where the rivers run clean through the forests of green, where the cities stand tall in the clear skies of freedom. Oh, say do our hearts sing out for harmony and love forever on the planet of our birth, blessed with on earth.
That's all, folks.